Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Hi, everybody. We've got a special song to sing for you here. Welcome back. Well, we've got Dr. Dave Stoop in the studio, and we are welcoming him back to radio after a while. And when I say we, it's Dr. John Townsend and Jill Hubbard with me today, along with Dr. Dave Stoop. Dave, welcome back, my friend.
Yay.
Well, great to be back.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people would love to hear what happened and what you've been through a little bit, and how you're doing today. Can you bring us up to date?
Well, I've had Parkinson's for the last couple of years, but then in March, just after the lockdown, I had a slight stroke. I didn't have to go to the hospital, but I couldn't talk and didn't eat much and really didn't realize that I had a problem with my left leg until sometime later when I got into physical therapy. But I'm like an Auschwitz survivor, a concentration camp survivor. I lost 30 pounds because I didn't like eating. It was a chore to eat because it affected my mouth.
Yeah.
And my leg. Those are the only obvious effects of the stroke.
So you shut down your practice then, is that right?
Yeah, I had to shut down the practice and close my office. And I just opened a Zoom counseling office this week.
Oh yay.
So, I'm back in business and back on the radio today, which
yay,
is good.
I'm so glad.
And then after this, you and I are going to tape the new program,
the Life Recovery program.
Today. And so that's really great. What's the prognosis, Dave? Or what do you think life's going to be like for you in the next few years?
Well, it's interesting. Kit Hill, one of our counselors, I think, he sent me an email saying that he had had a stroke 4 years ago. He had a major stroke. Hospitalized. He was back to counseling and doing coaching and back fully functioning. So it was very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Three months ago, I wouldn't talk in public because I don't think you could understand me too well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the more you talk, the better you talk.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
I've been talking a lot.
Well, when I talked with you just the other day, you know, you sounded so great. I just said, you know, this it's time that he come back on radio and be with us. And so I knew John was going to be on the day that we were taping Family Life Today, Life Recovery Today. So I wanted him to be on. And Dave, okay, here's the really, I might need to be embarrassed over this question, but have you learned anything, or is there some new awareness from all of this struggle that you've been through that you could share with us?
Well, I finished my book on Don't Die Before You're Dead.
Yes,
and
good.
And it spoke to me in the sense that I could have given up.
Mm-hmm.
I could have just said, this is the way the cookie crumbles, and that's too bad. But I wouldn't give in to that. And there's a sense in which you keep going. We have a nephew who had pancreatic cancer, and I sent him the manuscript, and he read it, and he said, "God still has something for me to do." And that's really what I learned, is I don't quit until it's over.
Absolutely.
Dave, you've always been that way, too.
Yeah.
It's not new. That's the way,
well,
as long as I've known you.
It was tempting to give up.
I'm sure.
And just let it go.
Mm-hmm. Glad you didn't. We'll be back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back, and just catching up a little bit there at the break with Dave. Really glad you're back, Dave. I'm glad you're back, and I'm glad you're doing so well and opening up the practice again. You and I, we've got a few more books to write before we're done here. So
yes.
Hold on, world. And if you don't know this, you know, Dave and I, we are the co-editors of the Life Recovery Bible, which has now sold over 3 million copies of this Bible. It's the Bible that Prison Fellowship gives away to any prisoner who wants one. It's the Pew Bible for the Salvation Army. And most days on Amazon.com, if you go to best-selling Bibles, you'll see an adventure Bible for kids. You'll see a Pew Bible or a graduate Bible. And then there's Life Recovery Bible. And the same applies to when the bestseller lists come out for Christian publishers. Now, there's a reason for that, and that's because all of those notes were done by Bible scholars who were recovering, and Dave arranged all of that, and I was so grateful that I was able to partner with him on that. Now, on October 29th, you'll see Dave and me on Life Recovery Today, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. That's when that airs. Well, how about we go to the phones, and let's talk with, how about we talk with Roger, and there you go. If I can grab Roger there, touch that number. There it is, right there, WPMH. Roger, what city are you from?
Well, I'm from Currituck County, which is near the Outer Banks of North Carolina, but
okay.
Not very far from the Virginia line, near Norfolk area of Virginia.
Awesome. Well, how can we help today? What's going on?
Well, my brother suggested I call and get some answers from you. So I've been married for a little over 27 years, and 3 months ago my wife came to me and said that she had met someone from church, and she was leaving me. She no longer was in love with me, and she was leaving me for him, and she moved to his house, been there for a little over 3 months, didn't speak to me for almost a month, then finally would communicate through texting, finally called, finally came over, says she doesn't want to give up on the marriage, but she's not willing to leave his house. Now, God's timing is perfect. I know I've been praying about this every day. She's been a Christian all her life. I have been one for most of mine, and this is so disturbing. I know I have God's permissive will to leave the marriage, but yeah. I love her, and I don't want to give up on her, but I want to know how long is long enough to try to put some sort of boundary on it.
You know, I got to tell you, I feel so bad for you. I don't know what the most recent statistic is, but you're something like 1 in 10 men would do what you're doing. Most every man would walk away, and I just really encourage you. And I'm really glad that you've called us here. How about we start with you, John? This is really a tough situation, and I wouldn't wish this on anybody. Wow.
Yeah, same here. And you know, the fact that you're calling with the kind of question you have says a lot about your character.
Yeah.
The very first thing I would do is I would say to her, "I'm so happy that you are thinking about me again and you're feeling something for me. And I understand you don't want to leave where you are. I get that. Are you willing to see a counselor?" Now, I'll tell you my
position. She is.
She is? Okay.
Wow.
Here's the position. In that counseling, you hope that it'll reconnect. You guys will heal old wounds. You know, there'll be forgiveness. There'll be change. There'll be repentance and all kinds of cool things. And then you got nothing to worry about because she'll move out and get with you. But if she persists in the "I'm torn" and he gives me this and you give me that, and she won't leave after some reasonable amount of time, then you have to say, "I can't do this," because it sets up a fantasy in her mind of, Well, when you're mean, I go to him, and when he's disappointing, I go to you, and then she never has to come to terms with the real person. So once you get in the session, you work with the counselor on that and just let her know. I would say that in the first session, I'll do anything it takes to change. Whatever I've done that's real, I'll change. But I need to know that pretty soon, if this is working, that you will maybe not move in with me, maybe go to an apartment, but you can't be cohabitating and in a relationship with somebody. It's not good for me or him. Or her. That'd be my boundary.
Jill, you have a thought here? You want to
share?
For Dave, do you have a thought?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
What were you going to
say? I just wanted to say she's been seeing a counselor for 6 weeks, but we're not joint counseling. The counselor told her she needed to work on herself and go to a neutral place where she wouldn't have any persuasion from the stockholders, as she put it. But yet her mother has offered to give her a neutral place, but she's still refusing. She says, "I'm coming soon," but she will not. This has been a month. She's been coming soon and still hasn't left.
Well, wait till you're in the session with her, in the marital session, and where that person's looking for both of your interests, and then say it there. That's where you need to do it. Don't do it like, you know, just you and she are probably still too, like, upside down with each other.
Well, okay, Dave, yeah, let's hear from you.
And then the counselor that she's seeing is really aligned with her, and it would be hard to make the transition to seeing you as a couple or together. But part of what you've got to work on together is what was missing. What did you overlook? How did you allow her to escape from the marriage relationship? Mm-hmm. And you want to hear that, and you want her to be able to be free to talk about that.
Yeah, because Jill, there are things that were not being said. She acted out what either you couldn't hear, didn't hear, or she couldn't say. So those are things that have to be uncovered in the session. Because, you know, you guys have a lot of history, so there's a lot to untangle. And this distraction of this other guy is someplace she's running to. But it's starting to unravel. And if you think about it, even in our legal system, they, you know, when you start proceedings for divorce, it's 6 months before it's official, because they really want people to think it through and have some time.
Now, I want to talk about audacity here. And so, Roger, there's only a certain type of person that would say, "I'm going to stay with the person that I cheated on and moved out with while we work on our marriage." That is a pretty strange request. And I just hope that the counseling that she's getting is good counsel. But whatever it is, you have to live with it. But I really do. If that doesn't change pretty quickly, I think you're going to have to reassess the situation a bit.
She ends up confused rather than clarified.
Really, I'm so sorry you're going through this. This is rough. Yeah. Anybody else have anything you want to? Roger, you have any other a question? Anything else for us?
No, I guess not. I mean, I saw a counselor myself, and he pretty much reiterated what you guys have just said. I believe God, everything's possible, you know, through God. And because of our relationship has been so genuine and very loving for so long, I would have thought, if I'd have put 1,000 names in a hat, she would have been the last one I would have ever thought of this. So I'm giving God a chance, and I'm giving her a chance, and just hoping for the best, praying for the best.
Yeah.
So, but I appreciate it.
I've got one more piece is, Roger, be scrupulous in owning your stuff.
Meaning?
We got stuff, right? We all have negative contributions to the marriage, whatever that is, attitudes, behaviors. But be scrupulous
Absolutely.
On your end, because, you know, she's clearly the one that's acting out. But every spouse has a certain percentage to say, you know, I need to own this part. It was bad. It was selfish. It was controlling or whatever. Or I thought I was perfect and you weren't. And I am so sorry, and I want to change. The offended spouse sometimes goes into the morally superior position of, I didn't act out, you did, so, you know, you're worse than me. Never works. But when the offended spouse, which is you, goes in and says, yeah, you did what you did, and it hurt me, I want to work on that, but here's how I contributed, be scrupulous about it. That'll increase your odds.
And I want to know more about what I did.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Roger, I want to be really clear. You did not contribute to her adulterous affair. You are a donor to the problems in the marriage. But
there you go.
I'll guarantee you there are many men who have been horrific to their wives, and the wife never had the affair. So I just want to be sure you don't accept any responsibility. Sometimes a therapist will say, well, what was your contribution to the affair? No. It was to the problem in the marriage. That was her choice. You had nothing to do with that choice. She could have done a lot of other things than had the affair. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
I thought about that. Yes, I know I had my faults, but I did not push her to that.
There you go.
Right.
No, that's right.
That's the balance, right?
Yes.
I'm gonna send you Healing is a Choice, and I'm going to suggest another book that we don't have. It's by Harley, and it's really good, and I had to use it at one time in my life, and it's Surviving an Affair by Harley, and that will really, really help you get through this. So glad you called. Man, that is painful. All right, let's go to Mike. He's a Club New Life member, it says right there, and Mike just happens to be calling from Lancaster, watches on a podcast. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call today.
And sure.
I guess I should say I'm really not all that good, or I wouldn't be calling.
Right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yes, but you're welcome here.
I understand that.
How can we help?
Well, I'm calling today because I'm in the last few weeks of my marriage. My wife has told me that on at the end of October, she's filing for divorce. The fault rests on me. I have lived a life of secrecy and lies through pornography addiction and sexual acting out. And the wounds I have created in her are so deep, and I know that I get really wrapped up in the shame of it. To the point that I keep coming back to being vulnerable and telling what I've done and saying how sorry I am, but I haven't been able to reach to her heart to show her that she matters and that I care, and I haven't really done a good job of displaying empathy. So that's the reason for my call, and I guess that would be the question, is how do I get past this place of shame to get to the place of empathy that she really needs?
Well, first of all, I mean, you recognize that you have the problem and you're admitting it and all of that, but what have you done to get help? I mean, that's the thing that speaks to her the most. What sources of help are you getting?
Well, I have been sexually sober for 18 months. I go to a 12-step program for that full 18 months.
Okay.
I go twice a week. I see a counselor once a week and listen to your show every day. In fact, I think your show has been one of the things that's helped me the most because in the stories that I hear of people relating their lives, I hear my parts of my story in different people, and it helps me to see where I've kind of gone astray and pieces that I've missed that I shouldn't have missed.
So you've been sober for 18 months, and you've been getting help, and so it's because of the past stuff prior to the 18 months that she wants to divorce you then?
That's part of it. The other part is in the intervening 18 months, she feels as though I haven't connected well with her, and there's truth to that. I don't deny it. I really have had trouble.
That's the empathy part you were talking about?
Yeah,
you go into shame, and when we go into shame, we can't have empathy for somebody else. That's just a basic principle. We can help you with this.
All right, I want you to hold on. I'm really, really glad that you called, and I'm really surprised to hear that you have 18 months, and then she's still going to leave.
Yeah, she wants the connection.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we got that clarified.
Hold on, we'll get right back to you. You're listening to New Life Live. If you could help us, it's 1-800- new life. I love what Mike said. He's my caller of the day, saying that the radio program helped. You know, we do a lot of things, but this is the piece that costs the most and reaches the most people, and we love getting to do it, and we're grateful when folks help. It's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'll be back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. And right now we're talking with Mike. And 18 months he has been clean, sober, and free. Wife is leaving. And so, John, you have some things you want to say. All of us, I think, want to chime in here for you, Mike. So let's start with you, John.
Mike, when you, when she wants to talk to you and be close, and I imagine what happened, I'm going to check this out with you, is that she wants to say something how, like, this hurt her or trust issues or how it damaged, you pretty much go into shame pretty quickly, right? Do I have that right?
Yes, that's correct. I show up like a little boy and not like the man I think she's looking for.
Okay. What are the messages in your head? As you, because you thought through this very well, we don't have to like instruct you on this part. You're aware that when your wife says, I need to talk about how much this damaged my sense of myself or trust or whatever, what are the messages that Mike is telling Mike at the time that cause you to become a little boy? There's always messages in our head.
Well, there's two answers to that. The first answer is, the message I hear is, I'm not worthy. That that I feel very afraid of what I'm losing, and I feel very inadequate and wrong for what I've done. That's the one answer. The second answer is that it's not normal that she says the kinds of things that you're saying. It's more a message of, how could you have done this? How could you not have known what you were doing would have affected me this way? Because it was a very self-centered life. And on the outside, the world saw success. They saw spirituality, all the things that an addict does to hide what's inside.
Okay. So the message then of either, it feels so condemning to you, like, I should have known better, because she's saying, how could I not know? I should have been a better guy than that, which that's a good... not a good condemning message, but also there's the I'm disqualified. Have you been working with your therapist on this? You said you've been counseling regularly.
Some we have, yes. I'm in the process of maybe making a switch to a counselor that focuses on sexual behavior and trauma issues, because I don't feel like I'm getting to the place where I'm jumping over this barrier that I'm calling the lack of empathy.
I'm not okay. I'm just not sure. A really good psychologist knows all that stuff. I wouldn't worry about the specialty. But here's what's got to happen: is that you go into, like you said, a little boy shamed place, and you're going to need to have experiences with someone where the following things happen. And I just want you to keep this little progression in mind. Number one, yes, I did it. So it's not like, well, it wasn't that bad, or I had a bad childhood or whatever. It's really bad, and I did it. Number two, I'm loved. Not by my wife right now, but I got God, and I call it a life team. I've got 3 to 10 people that love me and know all the bad stuff about me, and I'm okay with them. And number three, I'm working my program. Now, you've got to not do that in your head. You've got to have somebody else say that to you, because you have a judge in your head, Mike, and your judge is really, really mean to you right now. So you need to have somebody look at you. Now, I'll say it right now. I'm just practicing with you. Mike, I got it. We're all listening to you, and you really messed up. You had a secret life. There's no excuse for it. It was a bad thing you did, and it hurt your wife. But we're okay with you. We're okay with you. We're not mad at you. Nobody here at the show is mad at Mike that's listening to this. We want you to win. We care about you. We know that you're struggling. And number three, Mike, you're working your program, and we're really proud of you. And that gives a second voice inside your head besides the shame voice. You need more of these second conversations from others to combat that. And what we call it is it begins to neutralize the judge so it gets nicer to you. Now, however that happens, and a good psychologist can take you through that, that's what you need to do is to get that second voice from outside your head to give you a healthy message. I did screw up, but I'm totally loved by the right people, and I'm working my program. That's the key.
Jill, well, you have a thought? Dave?
Well, I think the other thing that would be helpful would be to be seeing somebody together.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Who can also hold her back in terms of her condemning
the how
communication.
Could you stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah. Could hold both of you, right?
And why aren't you guys seeing someone together like that?
I can only answer on my side of the equation, and I have been open from the beginning on that. That has been very difficult for my wife to agree to, and it has come across as messages of I need to show her more before she's willing to risk that kind of counseling. Mm. We did do a little bit of counseling in the early summer, about 4 sessions, and at the end she said she just couldn't handle that anymore. She didn't have the ability to take that kind of interaction with me. Mm. That's that answer.
Yeah, okay. Mm. Well, you know, I really think that would be so helpful. And if she's not willing to go to counseling, you know, we do a workshop called Restore for her. It's not because she has a problem, but she has an assignment. And the assignment is, whether she stays with you or not, is to forgive. And it helps with forgiveness. It also helps prevent anything like this happening again.
It also helps in the self-blaming, which she's got to be struggling with.
All right, we're gonna have to hold you over again, but we'll try to get to the other calls right after this. Mike, I'm glad that you've called. If you're listening to New Life Live, 1-800-229-3000.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the Transformation Welcome Gift, which includes a personal-sized Life Recovery Bible, a Life Recovery Journal, and 5 Life Recovery Workbooks. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life Video Library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops.
I did go to Take Your Life Back. That's been immensely helpful to me. That's why I continue to support the ministry with the hope that it, not only am I helping my own situation, that I'm helping others as well.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Rebecca, we're just finishing up with Mike here. And which of you beautiful people have a comment?
Well, I wanted to jump in a little bit with Mike. So, Mike, you know, you've expressed yourself very well. You understand what's going on. You know, you're articulate. But you have a problem with intimacy. And being an addict and running to all these different arenas has kept you from growing emotionally and developing that. And so you've stayed really safe when it comes to intimacy. And as you've already described, that's what your wife is picking up on. I think, you know, and you're doing all these right things, but something's still missing. So I think you need something that really can immerse you. And this is why we created things like our Everyman's Battle workshop, which is longer than just an hour in counseling or an hour and a half group, because it really helps you to kind of immerse in the concepts and to feel the support and the love around you and to break down some of those walls.
And it accelerates the individual counseling.
Yes, it does. It does. It really works well with that. And I'm thinking, too, you know, she may not want to go to counseling with you because, okay, we tried that, been there, done that, and nothing really moved. But to do something like our intimacy and marriage workshop, even if she says, no, I'm done, it's kind of a last-ditch effort. I don't know if you have kids, but, you know, you've invested in this marriage, and it's like, let's at least learn something before we say our goodbyes. Let's dig in and use this relationship to grow us both and to make sure we've, like, turned over every stone before we walk away.
That, yeah, I would be saying to her, if you're going to leave, and there's no hope, at least leave by saying we did everything
yeah.
we could, and if you would just give me this one day with this intensive, then you know, if you still want to walk away, I totally understand. Now, I've talked to women, and I've said, go do this as a believer before you leave, and then you can look back and say you've done everything you could. And none of those people have moved on. They've stayed because it just opens up so many doors. Anybody else for Mike before we move on? All right, Mike, I'm so glad that you called. And what would be a great book for Mike, you guys?
Worthy of Her Trust?
Worthy of Her Trust. We'll send that. But anything to help him to be aware of the growth that needs to become truly intimate as an adult man in this relationship.
How We Love.
That's good.
I'll send it. Mm-hmm. How We Love. Good. Coming your way. All right, let's go back to the phones. And how about we talk with Denise from Lebanon. Denise is on line 3 here. There we go. Hi, Denise. How are you today?
I'm blessed. How are you?
I'm blessed, too. Thanks for joining us. How could we help you today?
I've been married 32 years to an alcoholic.
Okay.
He's in recovery.
Great.
But he's miserable, and he keeps drinking.
Oh, that's
all
not good.
All three of my girls is on marijuana. One is in a homosexual relationship. And I'm trying for the life of me, besides praying, how do I handle this? Do I stay, give them the benefit of the doubt, and keep praying, hoping that they will eventually get the help that they need? Because I, too, used to be an alcoholic and a mm-hmm. drug addict, mm-hmm. and I've been clean 33 years.
Oh, that's so
wow.
good to hear. So good to
wow.
hear. All right, well, let's start here. Okay, so the question would be, the specific question for us would be what?
How do I handle this? Should I stay or should I go?
All right. Well, who wants to start? I definitely believe we've got some things that she could do that she's not doing that would help the situation. You know, I'm wondering if you've ever gone to a codependency meeting or Al-Anon or anything like that as part of your dealing with them.
I'm in Celebrate Recovery now.
Okay. All right, and have you ever given any of these people, husband, kids, an ultimatum that if something doesn't change, you're going to have to do something different yourself?
I gave my husband an ultimatum.
Mm-hmm.
And when I gave him the ultimatum, this is when he decided to go to Celebrate Recovery.
But he's still drinking. Right? Okay. Well, who would like to start off here and help Denise figure out what might be the next right thing for her to do?
Well, somehow the ultimatum has to be an ultimatum to where if you don't stop drinking and get into the recovery program, like I am involved with the recovery program, we're done. And somehow you have to be willing to act on that. I'm not sure that you are.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 32 years is a long time.
Yeah.
Sure is.
when you've been in recovery and he has not. So you were sober before you married him.
Yeah. So you might say, I gave you an ultimatum and you went to celebrate recovery. But the drinking has not stopped. So you're not in recovery. So I'm just gonna give you 14 days here to figure out how to get yourself off the alcohol.
Well, and it's going to be really tough for a man who's been drinking this long. Yeah. I mean, I think there has to be some increased help. You know, there are a lot of addiction specialist doctors who really, really help aid in this process, because he's not going to be able to just stop drinking, right?
Well,
his
it's
body's
going to
he's going to have to detox, and so he really needs some medical help. I would want him to pursue that. Is get the name of a good addiction specialist who, you know, that's all they do. They know addicts inside and out.
And she can get that at a recovery program.
Yeah, it's a medical doctor who's an addiction specialist. And they do addiction meds that really help in the detoxing and stopping the cravings.
Yeah, but it really is time to not let the status quo take over here.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you called. John, you have a thought here?
Yeah, Denise, that was all really, really good advice. The only piece I would add to that is I was literally overwhelmed when I listened to you. You've got a very dysfunctional husband, and you got three gals that are dysfunctional. And my first thought was, how do you handle that at once? And I started thinking, Denise is going to need to have some priorities. And here's my suggestion. Put the energy into the marriage and your husband's alcoholism.
Right.
And I'm assuming your daughters are all adults. Are they 18 or over, Denise?
They all adults.
Okay. Then you just tell them the truth. You just tell them, I would like for you to have a healthy, God-fearing life. Here's my suggestion, and let it go. Because the leaving and cleaving passage in the book of Genesis says that you're no longer functioning as their authority anymore. So you just tell them, here, I wish you'd stop, but I don't want Denise wasting her energy when the marriage is on fire. So keep your priority, him, the drinking, celebrate recovery, getting help. Tell the girls the truth, but put the other strokes in the priority.
All right. I'm so glad you called. I'm going to send you Take Your Life Back. It really is a book on my side of the street. I think that's going to be a boost here. John, that's why you're John. That was so helpful. That is truly the way to do it. All right. Let's go to Thomas and listens on WAVA. Thomas, how are you today?
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Yeah. What's the question for us, Thomas?
I'm just trying to figure out how I can function normally with my diagnosis. I'm currently schizoaffective disorder with bipolar, and I've been in the hospital since I was 18, going in and out, going off medication, and I think I got some post-traumatic stress from being in the hospital, some abuse went on there, some emotional and mental abuse. I hear voices, and I'm trying to discern which one is the voice of God, so I tried following the voices, and that got me into a lot of trouble. I'm 30 years old. I'm 30 years old now. I live at home with my dad. I'm taking the medication, but I just don't see a future.
All right. Will you hold on? You hear the music. We're going to get to you right after this. I'm glad you called, Thomas. You're listening to New Life Live. We've got great intensive and intimacy in marriage, October the 14th coming up. Would sure love for you to be part of that. Intimacy in marriage. It's a one-day virtual event. Virtually changes everything.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back, and we're speaking with Thomas, and really had a lot of tough stuff going on here. And so, Thomas, what is the question for us again that you'd like us to help you with?
just how to focus. I'm trying to read the Bible and I can't focus. I'm on medication that makes it hard to remember things and to focus clearly and comprehend what I read.
Okay.
My question is, I guess, how to function in this. I'm on disability and have a part-time job, but I can't live on my own. And I think a lot of my problems coming from the house that I'm living in. Just a lot of voices, more voices in the house than when I'm at work. But
well, Thomas, I got a quick question for you. You're on medication now, right?
Yes, sir.
And how long have you been on the medication that you're on? Do you have any idea how long they've been giving that particular medication to you?
Since January 1st. I went to the hospital January 1st, 2020.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, sometimes you tell folks what's going on, and maybe they know the type of medication you need, but they've prescribed the wrong one, and maybe there's another medication that they'd want to try or add to it or something, so that the voices.
Right. I think that's significant.
Yeah.
John, I mean, that's the first thing that stood out is if you're still hearing voices, I mean, there are no perfect meds. We know that. But someone with schizoaffective disorder can function with the right, you know, medication support. And so if you're still hearing voices, then that's a side effect that really is intolerable. And that really needs to be reported to your doctors so that they can closely monitor that. So I'm hoping that you're doing that. You're letting them know.
Do they know that the voices are still there?
Yeah, I told them that, but I'm afraid to go on more medication because I've been lethargic before, and I wake up with depression normal, and been over medicated before.
Yeah, and I can certainly understand that and appreciate you not wanting to be over medicated, but I'm wondering if there is some fine tuning of the medication.
Under medicated.
Yeah, maybe. You don't want to be under medicated either, or
wrongly medicated.
Yeah, yeah, right. So to and that's where being an advocate for yourself. And saying, I don't want to be lethargic. But hearing voices is problematic for me.
Yeah.
What are my options?
Really, there's no option except for medication, sorry to say. The science is that when people are hearing things and have schizoaffective like you do, the science has shown us that the only solution to get things straight about delusions and hallucinations, that sort of thing, is medication. So we'd like for you to kind of do a reset in your mind and say, it didn't work well, I don't like being numb, but I'm going to keep pursuing this with really good doctors until they get the right combination, and not to give yourself an option to get off of it. That would be dangerous.
And we'll ask our folks to pray for you. And the good news is some of these new medications, people are really functioning very, very well. But let's get rid of those voices.
And then I think, John, you said you have, or
Thomas,
you said you have a part-time job. I think it's really important that you have some kind of community.
Yeah.
Because that's how we can test out our reality. You know, we need people close to us to say, okay, this is what I'm thinking. Does that ring true to you? Mm-hmm. Like, we need those mirrors in our life. We all do. To kind of ground us and help us to know, we're not out to lunch here. And so I think that's important as well.
Community, very important. Thank you for calling us, Thomas. I think I've got time for Alicia, final caller, San Francisco, KFAX. Alicia, I did want to try to get to your call, even though we don't have a lot of time. How could we help you today?
Thank you. Thank you for being there. It's a blessing. I'm calling to find out how reconciled between myself and my grown children, one of which has grandchildren, and I haven't seen them for or been with them for about 6 months because I'm in my 70s and pretty much sheltered in. And they want me to go over and visit and go indoors and hug and socialize. And we're at odds, and it's been painful. And I want to know how I can, how we can maybe come to an understanding or reconcile something like this. It's been very, very hard for both both sides.
Sure. Yeah. What do you guys think would be a good path for Alicia? She doesn't want to go in, and she's afraid of COVID, and they're obviously not.
Well, we haven't seen our grandkids either for 6 months because we're sheltered in. And but nobody's pressuring us to do it, so that that's important. I think that you got to take care of yourself, and that means you resist the pressure because it's not worth the risk. Because kids can be the carrier of it, but not affected by it.
Yeah,
and that would be that would be frightening.
And so I would.
Well, the other thing is,
go ahead.
The big thing is, I believe in Jesus Christ, and I feel as though I'm not trusting God, and not being wise. I pretty much feel like a coward.
Well, no, that's not true.
No, that's not true.
Are very justified in your concerns. And I would just wonder if through cell phones and iPads and things,
you couldn't
up your connection with them with some kind of messaging and emails and text and then live video connecting. How about that?
We do FaceTime and text.
Okay.
And I was willing over a couple of times, gave him some suggestions on what would make me feel comfortable as well as himself, but I was told that my suggestions were unrealistic, and
Because I was thinking of a compromise, you know, like meeting at a park, right? Everybody taking their temperature before they meet,
right?
You know, and being able to maybe see the kids play. That kind of thing.
Right.
That's, you might want to start with a question to your kids saying, is there anything other than what you've presented that you would consider, such as us meeting at a park, and see if they would respond to that. I am so glad you called. I'm going to send you Take Your Life Back, and I hate these stories where grandparents can't see their grandkids. It's just very, very painful.
You know, and on that spiritual part you brought up about, am I being a coward because I believe, you know, should people that believe in Jesus be afraid? That gets thrown out a lot, Denise, and it's really kind of crazy. If you go to, do you read your Bible?
Alicia.
I'm sorry, Alicia. Do you have a Bible that you read?
Well, we'll send her one. I'll send her a restoration.
Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 says, guard your heart. Now, that says, you've got to, like Dave said, you've got to take care of yourself and be a steward of your life so that you can live to fight another day. You're not being a coward. You're being really a good steward.
God didn't give us a spirit of fear, but he didn't give us a spirit of stupidity either. You need to do whatever you can to keep
yourself
safe.
Yeah, where'd that come
from? Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks for joining us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Great to have you back, Dave. Thanks John, for being here.
We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.